Thanks for downloading this episode of the IVMV podcast. We have an interview episode for you today. The Cubs minor league system has a couple of new affiliates this season. One of them is Myrtle Beach. The Pelicans replaced Daytona as the high A affiliate in the Cubs system. To tell us about the Myrtle Beach Pelicans, we have Nathan Barnett with us on this episode. Nathan, thanks for coming on the IVMV podcast.
Oh, thanks a lot, Corey. It is an absolute pleasure to be on it. I enjoy listening to you guys and being a part of the Cubs system here officially, I guess, for basically just a week. It has been overwhelming the amount of buzz and attention that we get. And then even I've personally got the people that are paying attention to what I say. So thanks for having me on. It's been really fun.
Welcome to the Cubs family.
Thank you.
I really enjoy all of the interaction between the Cubs affiliates on Twitter. I think you guys are coming into this organization at a unique time. A lot of fans are paying attention to the Cubs minor league system for a couple of reasons. First off, the team is in the process of a rebuild from the bottom up. So the minor league system is really interesting with great talent. And I think the second reason fans are paying attention to the minor leagues is because technology has made it so much easier to follow these teams. I remember relying on a short little update on a prospect or two in the Cubs TV broadcast back in the day to know what was going on in the minors. But now through Twitter, team websites, and the different mobile apps, we have almost as much access to these prospects in your teams, the minor league teams, as we do with the big league team.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, from our standpoint, that's really energizing. And you brought up the unique time within the Cubs system. We're very cognizant of that here. When we made the switch to the Cubs, you know, it was a situation where there were lots of reasons we did it. We can get into that if you want to. But
sure.
One of the big reasons, you know, from talking to our fan standpoint was, look, you know, the Rangers took us to the postseason with the players they brought here four straight years. But we're about to adopt the number one farm system in baseball and have a great team coming in from Kane County, mostly that had, you know, the best record of minor league baseball, the Baseball America Manager of the Year. So all of that was great. And, you know, here in Myrtle Beach, probably a lot of people are familiar with this, but we're a pretty big tourism market. We draw 16 million visitors a year, one of the primary tourist destinations in the entire country. And our locals are extremely important to us, but so are the tourists. And so to be able to connect with people around the country that are Cubs fans that would think about maybe traveling down here, that's what it's all about. And so I think you're right about the technology, and we've certainly done everything we can to embrace that. We're still trying to get better at that, because ultimately, you know, the people that aren't living here that are thinking about coming down here, if they can learn more about us and learn what we're about from a on-field entertainment standpoint in the park, but also about the players that we have, you know, that's really, really important to not only to our business, but to what keeps us going every day and why we get excited to come to the ballpark.
Yeah. So you guys were at Cubs convention. How was that? And it's kind of your first interaction with Cubs fans. And then can you kind of talk a little bit about, I guess, since we were on the topic of technology and where it's at and everything, kind of some of the interaction on Twitter that you're having with fans?
Sure. The Cubs convention, you know, we talked to a couple of people before we went down there. I went down with our senior director of marketing, Kristen Call, at the time, one of our ticket sales representatives, who's now director of business development here, Caitlin Guild, and a member from the Chamber of Commerce, Rachel Ammon, who has really been focused on some regional marketing, but in particular sports and drawing people to Myrtle Beach through sports events that happen here in Myrtle Beach. And we talked to some people before we went, and everybody kind of said the same thing, which is, you don't understand what this is going to be like until you go. It's absolutely crazy. You know, it kind of reminds me of when I first went to college and people said, you know, it's going to be the greatest time of your life, but it's really hard to explain. You have no idea what it's going to be like till you get there. And I think it was somewhat similar. You know, I come from Dallas, Texas, and the Rangers always did a fan fest. I think I went one year, and I think I went to the All-Star Game fan fest when the All-Star Game was there. But the kind of buzz at that place was just insane. And what really blew me away, and you talked about the unique time of the Cubs, and certainly this year is pretty unique, and I know talking to people there, the Cubs convention this year was even in a class of its own compared to some years prior because of the energy of the new players and Joe Maddon, et cetera. But, you know, going there, I think we expected a lot of people from Chicago, and there certainly were, but We met people from Texas, from California, from, you know, southern parts of the Midwest, from the South. That was really mind-blowing that someone would travel all the way to Chicago for a weekend
in January.
Luckily, the weather was actually pretty good that weekend, but it could have been horrible.
Right.
And I think it was right after we left. Just to be in a hotel for a couple of days and be around a bunch of people wearing Cub stuff and get some autographs. It was pretty mind-blowing and I think extremely telling of the kind of fan base that the Cubs have. And then as far as the Twitter element goes, that is it's been, like I said, we're trying to get better every day. It's something that we continue to still play around with and are trying to learn ways that we can engage fans in a better way. But the Cubs family, if you will, hashtag Cubs family, that's kind of been running around the last few months, they've inspired us, I think. And I think it really starts with what Tennessee has done, the Smokies. I think really, in my opinion at least, or maybe the class of the Cubs family when it comes to the way they interact on social media, especially on the Twitter side. South Bend has done an incredible job. The transformation that they have made since switching to the Cubs system as well has been absolutely tremendous and really skyrocketed what they're able to do. But we all push each other, and I think that's what's been really fun. Previously when I was in the working in the Rangers system, I interacted with the media relations folks and the social media folks a little bit with the other affiliates. But I've reached out to the South Bend people, to the Tennessee people, the people with Eugene, people with Iowa on a pretty consistent basis. We're talking about different ways that, you know, we can help each other out, that we can help promote things with each other. And, you know, we definitely make fun of each other at times and kind of poke and prod. But at the same time, we understand that each other's success only is going to make ourselves more successful. So if we can help promote South Bend and they're going to help promote us, that's a huge plus. But it's been a lot of fun. And I think trying to find exactly what our identity is and what our voice is on Twitter. You know, if you were to imagine the Myrtle Beach Pelicans Twitter account as a person, what is that person like?
Right.
That's been a fun process to try to figure that out and figure out exactly where we fit into the Cubs family. Are we the middle child? You know, are we the youngest? Are we the most rambunctious? What are we?
Right.
And trying to fit that in and have everybody kind of have their own role. I think it's been a really fun process.
Yeah. And it just as a fan, it's been a ton of fun to watch. I mean, I think it kind of started, at least I started noticing it right before Cubs convention. And I think that's a great idea, you know, just to have that identity and especially when you put it into like the context of a family. I think that's really it's interesting and it's fun to watch. And I'll say, like, when I see the conversation starting to go where all of the affiliates are talking back and forth to each other, I mean, I think it's great. And I think that fans really kind of like seeing that interaction between the different levels and kind of having that personality behind those individual teams.
Yeah. So, you know, I help run the Twitter account here for the team and I have notifications on my phone and I can tell you the fans definitely like it because my phone has never blown up more than they has in the last few months. Yeah, those interactions are a lot of fun and it breaks up the day too. One of the things that's great about working in baseball is that almost every day is really different from the last. And so, for example, a few weeks ago, we had sort of a little battle between each other, the affiliates did, about merchandise and about who had the best hat. And,
right.
You know, there was one person that was like, which hat should I buy? And then all of a sudden he got like, you know, 40 replies over the next couple hours with photos and stuff. And that was totally unanticipated, unexpected that happened that day. But it was a nice little breakup, 20 minutes or so of my day that was unexpected and sort of added some extra responsibility onto my plate. But also was something that at the end of the day was really fun. And looking back on it now, I still remember that moment. And there have been a handful of those. So it's been incredibly fun to be a part of and to feel like, you know, not only are we doing it and we're having fun, but the fans are appreciating it. And we're seeing that absolutely with the amount of mentions that we're getting, the favorites, the retweets, et cetera.
Right. So if someone listening to this is not following you on Twitter, what is your Twitter handle?
Yeah, we are at Pelican Baseball, not Pelicans Baseball with an S, but no S, Pelican Baseball.
So I think because Cubs fans are probably not familiar with Myrtle Beach Baseball outside of course Kenny Powers and Eastbound and Down, could you tell us a little about the history of baseball there in Myrtle Beach?
Yeah, absolutely. So the history of Myrtle Beach baseball really goes back to the early 90s. There was a team in 91, 92, I believe, either that or 92, 93. That was a Blue Jays affiliate called the Myrtle Beach Hurricanes. And they were in the South Atlantic League, so a different league, low A ball. and they were a Blue Jays affiliate. And actually, they didn't even play in Myrtle Beach. They played in Conway, which is where Coastal Carolina University is, just up the road here. It's depending on the time of year, it can be a 20-minute drive or an hour drive with some beach traffic on some crazy days. But Coastal Carolina, where they're located basically is where the team played at the time before this ballpark was built. That team only lasted a couple of years, and then they moved on. Speaking of which, we're actually going to do a Myrtle Beach Hurricanes throwback night, which is going to be a lot of fun this year. But there was no professional baseball between that point and 1999 when the ballpark was open and the Braves affiliate started here. We're actually the original Durham Bulls franchise. So when the Durham Bulls became a AAA affiliate, they didn't move per se. They bought the rights to all of their marks and the franchise name and everything like that. And they were actually an expansion team in the International League in AAA. And that Carolina League franchise was sold. They moved to Danville for a year while the ballpark was being constructed here. And we opened up in 1999 as a Braves affiliate. For 12 years, the team was an Atlanta Braves affiliate, which is probably the closest regional tie, although with the transient nature of this market and all the people that retire here, it's not overwhelmingly a Braves town by any stretch. And then when Chuck Greenberg purchased the team in 2006, tons of renovations happened at the ballpark. And then Greenberg was involved with the Texas Rangers organization as part of the Texas Rangers Baseball Express, I think was the name of their group. It was him and Nolan Ryan that went through that long bankruptcy proceeding with Tom Hicks, the former owner of the Rangers. And they were sort of in a bidding war with a group fronted by Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks. Long story short, Greenberg became the chairman of the Texas Rangers, and that ownership group took over. And during that process in 2010, they started looking – the PDC was up. The player development contract was up. And so they started looking at, you know, well, I already own this team in the Carolina League. We should make this a Rangers affiliate. It was just a really natural, logical fit to do that. So that happened. The team started as a Rangers affiliate in 2011. And I believe after the first year, they extended the two-year PDC to a four-year deal, which is the maximum deal the PDC can be.
Right.
And that PDC just came up this past year. And there's a whole long story behind the switch. But short story is that it happened very quickly once the negotiating window opened, and now we're part of the Cubs.
So can you talk a little about the facilities and the ballpark at Myrtle Beach? We know that the Cubs, in making some of these affiliation decisions this last year, they based a lot of this on the quality of facilities. And so can you talk a little bit about what you guys have there in Myrtle Beach?
Sure. Well, like I said, the ballpark was built in 1999, so it's not the newest park in the league, but by no stretch is it the oldest. Very well-kept facility. Our operations team here does an absolutely fantastic job. Ballpark is spick and span every day. One of the great things about being in a tourist market is that we know that there are fans that come out. This might be their only Pelicans game ever. So we treat every single night like opening night. We treat every single night like a Saturday night. Sort of party-like atmosphere. There are people that are here on a Tuesday that are just looking to have a good time because they're not going to work tomorrow. They're on vacation. So from a fan experience standpoint, every night is a big night for us. We really don't have the really dog day crowds of, you know, 900 people, 1,100 people. We don't have, we don't have a lot of the low nights. Our biggest nights are actually not even Saturdays because of the weird sort of nature of the tourism market, and that's a huge changeover day. So if you come out to the ballpark, no matter what day it is, the crowd's probably going to be pretty good. We averaged about 3,500 fans a year ago. It was the largest in team history. We expect that to grow just because of the momentum that the franchise has had, but also because of the Cubs affiliation switch and all the extra buzz that we have seen. We've been ranked in the top five by Stadium Journey magazine for the best ballpark experience in minor league baseball. Last year we were ranked fourth, and by far the highest in the Carolina League. And we were actually in the top 50 in all of sports, ahead of some places like the new Cowboys Stadium in Dallas or in Arlington, Notre Dame's football stadium, the Rose Bowl, places like that. So this is a great fan experience first and foremost. But more to your point about the facilities on the baseball side, we just underwent a six-figure, $150,000 renovation of the clubhouse. which hadn't really been touched in a serious way since the ballpark opened in 1999. And it's really just an ongoing commitment to upgrading this facility, which is a city-owned ballpark. We really feel like we're the stewards of this place, but the ownership group fronted by Chuck Greenberg has done an incredible job continuing to make sure this place is up to date. I believe that they've invested over $3 million since the team was purchased back in 2006. So when there's a need, we try to fix it. You know, the clubhouse is nice. The weight room and training room are definitely, you know, in a good state right now. We're very responsive to needs. So if we hear something from the Cubs, hey, you know, we really like to have this, we're going to do our best to try to do it. And it was a big part of the conversation this offseason, was trying to make sure that we were ready for them and that they had everything that they needed.
So you mentioned the Pelicans are part of the Carolina League. Most leagues in the minors are kind of known for being strong in pitching or maybe strong offensively. What can you tell us about the Carolina League, and what should we maybe keep in mind as far as stats go and how to interpret them based on the Carolina League competition?
Right. Well, the Florida State League is actually probably the one high A league that I pay the least amount of attention to. So you and the rest of the Cubs world are probably going to have to give a little bit of context to how it compares to the Florida State League. I'm a little bit more familiar with the California League for whatever reason. And the California League, known as a really hitters ballpark or hitters league, really high run totals, and there's lots of wind, and sometimes the air is thin depending on where you're playing. We're definitely the opposite here. It's a very pitcher friendly league. There are some ballparks that are extremely pitcher friendly. Wilmington comes to mind. That place is basically a black hole to try to get the ball out. They always have the fewest home runs hit in the league. And so when the team is in Wilmington, don't expect a lot of home runs. Even Joey Gallo had a somewhat tough time getting them out last year for the Pelicans. It's a pitcher-friendly league, but I really think that it's a little bit overstated. It's kind of a cliche about this league that it's such a pitcher-friendly league. There's some ballparks that play pretty hitter-friendly. Frederick is one of them that plays very hitter-friendly. Salem does, except for home runs. They have a huge wall in the outfield. I want to say it's like 25, 30 feet high. So home runs are a little tough there, but you get a lot of wall ball doubles in Salem. But the pitcher-friendly ballparks are probably here. We're slightly below neutral, I would say. And then Wilmington is a very difficult place to hit at. Let me think. Potomac is pretty pitcher-friendly. Winston-Salem is the other really hitter-friendly one. So when you see the team is playing in Winston-Salem or in Frederick, you can expect the run totals to be a little higher.
Well, if overall the league is somewhat pitcher-friendly, that's a good thing for this Myrtle Beach team because of all the strong pitching that was with Kane County last year that you guys have on your roster this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two ways to look at it. Either it's great for those pitchers who are going to continue to post good numbers, or who knows, maybe they don't need it. You're right, though, the pitching staff, and really there's a lot of conversation with the pitching staff, but this roster is loaded up and down. You know, we got 9 players that are in Baseball America's top 30 prospects, 9 players in MLB Pipeline's top 30. And this is, at least from what I can tell, I haven't gone back to every single year because we don't have all the information to do it. I think that's the most this team has had. You know, there was so much talk last year at the beginning of the year that this might be the most talented Pelicans team in history, with the likes of Joey Gallo and Jorge Alfaro, two really highly touted Rangers prospects. Chichi Gonzalez started the year there as well, who was very close to cracking the big leagues. But that team had 6 of them. This is 9.
Right.
And you look up and down the lineup, and there's just not a non-prospect in the lineup, really. I mean, every single guy, even the non-top 30 guys like Carlos Peñalver, who's an absolute gem of a defensive player out there, a guy in Daniel Lockhart who's really making strides. You know, they're just – even Sean Dunstan Jr., you know, he kind of gets lost in this outfield that has 3 top 30 guys, but he's a very good player in his own right and has a great chance to make the big leagues as well. So really up and down, this roster is just extremely talented, and there's so much to talk about. It's been overwhelming trying to just figure out how to fit everything into the broadcast because these guys have so much going for them and so many interesting things to say about them. So as I mentioned, you know, 9 players in that top 30, and 5 of those are position players. The most highly ranked one is Billy McKinney. We haven't got to see a whole lot of him yet, but he has been fun to watch. You know, plays a pretty solid outfield and can do a lot of things. Really is seemingly everything well, which is sort of a perfect microcosm of this entire team. There's not one thing that you look at and say, that's what this team is carried by, which a year ago with this club was power. This team's got some pop. They can run. They can hit. Billy McKinney's a perfect example of that, a guy who's expected to hit for a high average. The power is supposed to be developing, continuing to come along. You certainly see it at batting practice. He nearly had a home run in the second game of the season that just missed, and can run on the bases as well. On the pitching side of things, you know, the first two nights we got to see Dwayne Underwood and Dowdry Torres, who were a ton of fun to watch. Underwood, I mean, that guy, he's obviously still got a ways to go, but when I watched him that first night, I was just blown away. I was like, this guy looks like a big league pitcher. He's just a big body out there that attacks hitters, commands the zone, has a good mix of pitches, fastball really challenges hitters. And then Torres, who really got roughed up in that first outing, I thought it was about as good as a performance can be when you allow six runs in less than five innings. His fastball was really moving, the slider sharp. Just left a couple of pitches up that got hit out of the ballpark. And we talked about the ballparks in this league. One thing to note about our ballpark, even though it is mostly a pitcher-friendly ballpark, especially as the summer moves along and the weather changes, the one exception to that is left field. It's only 308 down the left field line, and both of the home runs went there. In some of the parks in the league, neither one of those balls gets out.
Yeah, so kind of wrapping things up here, I love minor league baseball. I have kids. It's a great family event. It allows me to watch some baseball while doing something with the family involving them. Minor league teams are known for their creative and unique promotions. Does Myrtle Beach have anything unique planned here coming up in this season?
I think to some extent you could say that almost every night is extremely unique. Our promotional schedule is absolutely insane. It's packed with the goofiest, craziest stuff that you'll see really across minor league baseball. But one of the things I really, really love about working here, and part of the reason that the Pelicans organization drew me in, and part of the reason that I wanted to come here, was that although we're very goofy in minor league and we have a lot of fun, it's also extremely community oriented. So almost everything that we do, especially when it's fun and games and sort of off the wall, it has a community tie-in. I think the best example of this is from last year, which some people might be familiar with, was our prostate cancer awareness night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Our general manager and now president, he was the vice president at the time a year ago, was talking about prostate cancer awareness night, which was part of a strikeout cancer series that we've continued this year across six nights. Last year, we were kind of building up the momentum to that night, and Andy was on a local radio show here in town, and they sort of jokingly said, well, why don't you get a prostate exam on the field? And they sort of referenced the Katie Couric thing, which was not a prostate exam, obviously, but sort of just the fact to do something public to raise awareness for it. And he sort of laughed it off and was like, there's no way we're going to do that. And got back into the office, and there was a little bit of chatter about it. We're like, we really need to do this. Like, this would be great. This would be really – would get us a lot of attention, but could also raise a tremendous amount of awareness for a cancer and prostate cancer. Right. It's extremely curable when detected early, and a lot of people don't realize that. So this is one of those things where we really can make a really real impact. And he said, well, that's great, but we can't just do it as a PR stunt. It can't just be this thing where we're just trying to get national media attention. So at the time – we had also been trying to raise awareness for a local girl here in town in Carolina Forest, which is just up the road, who is battling terminal brain cancer. At the time, I think she was 9. I believe she's 10 now, named Fallon Emery. And you can find her on Facebook and Twitter at Fierce Fallon. So he said, at the time she was at 2,500, maybe 3,000 likes on Facebook. And he said, okay, if she can get to 10,000 likes, I believe it was 10,000, maybe 12,000, somewhere in there, then I'll do it. You know, I want to make sure that we're going to build some momentum for her and help her fight so they can pay for her medical expenses and her living expenses and things like that. Well, a couple of days later, Darren Revelle ended up reaching out to our GM, and the rest is sort of history. It ended up spiraling almost out of control with the amount of attention that it got. Andy was doing radio shows across the country, even one up in Canada. We had media attention across the country and even across the pond in England. And then when the video actually played, he had the prostate exam up in the press box during the seventh inning stretch while singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And it was played on Good Morning America, I believe, the Today Show. Headline News had it. Every single sports outlet you can think of posted the video. It went absolutely viral. And that's a perfect example of what we do. But to specifically answer your question, we do have the Strikeout Cancer Series, which as this airs now, we've run through two of them. Most recently, Wednesday night, the Deflate Cancer Night, which was sort of a play on the Patriots Deflate Gate, where we're giving away inflatable beach ball-y sort of baseballs. They're like beach balls that look like baseballs. And 11 of every 12 are completely deflated, and only one of every 12 we're handing out is a deflated football, which is the same ratio from the Deflategate thing.
Right.
But we've got stuff all year long. You know, Military Appreciation Night's a big one for us. Not as much fun necessarily from a minor league standpoint, but it's a huge night for us. The Strikeout Cancer Series is big, but some of the more crazy things we're doing, I think the one I'm probably most excited about is Christmas Vacation in July, which is on July 26th, in honor of Joe Maddon and his cousin Eddie, which is supposedly where the sort of negotiations took place for him to become the manager, was at his RV with the Cubs brass. We said, how can we incorporate this? Well, cousin Eddie, the reference to Christmas Vacation, there's a popular minor league tradition of doing Christmas in July. Well, what if we do Christmas Vacation in July? So we're doing a Christmas or a Christmas in July sort of theme. There'll be Christmas decorations around the ballpark, but we're also going to incorporate a bunch of elements from the movie as well. And we're wearing these absolutely god-awful uniforms that night that are basically a Santa costume with Christmas lights wrapped around it and tangled, like from the scene from the movie. but that's one of, I believe, 10, maybe 11 alternate uniforms that we're wearing this year. So keep an eye out for that, especially if you watch on MLB TV. There's some really great uniforms that are going to be out there. And again, a charitable component to all of that. We auction those off for local charities, and Cubs fans are going to be able to purchase some of those online. We're going to have at least a couple of jerseys available from every single jersey auction up online at our website. We'll have information about that on our social media as well. So most of those are done in park, but if you find a jersey you absolutely love, you will have the chance to bid on those as well, and it's going to go to a great cause.
Well, Nathan, if Cubs fans that don't live in South Carolina would like to follow Myrtle Beach games this year, how can they listen and watch these games?
Absolutely. We have a variety of different ways, and all of those are listed on our website. If you go to MyrtleBeachPelicans.com under the multimedia tab, there's a link that says watch and listen to the Pelicans, and that's going to give you every single way that you can do so. But the primary ways are on our primary flagship station's website, which is AM 1450 ESPN Myrtle Beach. There's a live stream on their website. If you want to listen on a mobile device, you can do so either through the MILB First Pitch app or the TuneIn radio app. And if you go to TuneIn, you're going to search for WRNN, and you'll see two stations. It's WRNN Myrtle Beach without the logo. That's the one you're looking for. And then if you want to fork over a few dollars for the MILB TV feed, we are, I think, the class of minor league baseball at this level in terms of MILB TV feed. And we just upgraded our system here to have a high-definition TriCaster, which is sort of jargony. But basically what that means is that the quality of the broadcast is about as close to HD as you can get. Minor League Baseball compresses everything into standard definition, but compared to where we were last year, it's a much, much better picture. And the production guys here do an incredible job, really make it look like a TV broadcast. So those are the primary ways. And like you said earlier, Twitter is a great way to follow the team as well.
And you guys have Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of stuff, too. People can find it on your website, I'm sure.
We do. Myrtle Beach Pelicans, Facebook.com/Myrtle Beach Pelicans is the Facebook page. Again, the Twitter handle is Pelican Baseball. A little confusing. The Instagram is actually Pelicans Baseball with an S. So Pelicans Baseball Instagram. Twitter is Pelican Baseball, and Facebook.com/Myrtle Beach Pelicans.
And I will put the links to all those things on the post for this episode. So if you're listening through a podcasting app, if you go to our website, you can find the links to those too. So Nathan, I know that the minor league schedule is chaotic. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us. And I really look forward to following the Pelicans this year.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much, Corey. Have a great season. I'll be listening.